epidemiologists become demographers in a disaster. And I guess the main point that I want to bring up in this presentation is that in a disaster, youthful health research needs a denominator. You know, we can talk about relative measures and absolute measures, and there's a in disaster situations, you know, it's very common that there's a needs assessment taking place, but it's frequently a number of percentages, and you don't have any you know, absolute numbers, any counts. So the context for this is in Katrina, of course, New Orleans. And I'd like to talk about some survey methods that we used, consider those the estimates that were produced, and then compare the methods a little bit, talk about limitations, you know, for the disaster, post-disaster setting. So the, you know, the rationale for population estimation, I don't think I need to make a big case for this, but certainly a critical decision support function after disaster. Demographic estimates guide all sectors of planning, widely used. And a key thing that we certainly found, planners want estimates that are good, fast, and cheap. And those three things really can't exist at the same time. It's always a balance. So, as I said, I think we're all pretty familiar with Katrina, 2005, end of August. Obviously, it caused a lot of damage to New Orleans and the greater New Orleans region. The complete and prolonged collapse of the public infrastructure, in addition to the damage, you know, also caused a significant migration in the region and prevented people from returning very quickly. So, what we knew right after Katrina, or right during Katrina, is that all of our previous data was obsolete. Census data, nothing was essentially going to be useful to us. In the City of New Orleans Emergency Operations Center, which of course is kind of the hub and the planning information hub in a disaster, we started looking at what data sources might be available to help us model it or kind of get a guesstimation of who's returning and where. We really did not find any data that could help us do this. So we ended up requesting some technical assistance from the CDC. And they happen to have a team that had been deployed that had some good experience working in refugee settings and doing population estimation. So it seemed like a good fit. So we conducted, with the CDC's help, three surveys. One was conducted 2 months after Katrina, at the end of October. Another one a month later. And then one at the end of January, 5 months after Katrina. Following on this project, the state was, of course, recognizing that between Katrina and Rita, there was widespread devastation and as I mentioned, a mass migration. And so building on these early projects, they authorized a 2006 Louisiana Health and Population Survey. And that was to cover 18 hurricane-affected parishes in South Louisiana. That involved just technical assistance from the CDC and Census Bureau as well. All of these survey methods relied on the housing unit method, which basically considers the household population and the group quarters population. Household population being made up of basically households times the average number of persons per household. So in everything I'm going to discuss, we did do some separate estimates for group quarters, but that's not really what we're interested in here. And it is traditionally a very small percentage of the population. I think in New Orleans before the storm, it was 3% or something. So some key, I guess, methodological questions in conducting a household population survey. You know, always you have that question of selecting a representative sample. But an added issue that you have in the population estimation is, I guess, how does a housing unit equal a household? And that kind of deals with issues of habitability and occupancy. Okay, so to get into the methods here, the first survey was a stratified spatial sampling design. Essentially, we divided the city, you can see from the map, flooded to unflooded. We divided the city into the East Bank, which is kind of that northern area, and the West Bank. And it does not look like East and West Bank, but that's just a, you know, bizarre, but if you follow the way it winds, it straightens itself out. We used geographic information systems to randomly select 82 waypoints per stratum, and so 82 on the east bank, 82 on the west bank. We did a spin the bottle method. Went to the waypoint. We had we printed out paper maps of each waypoint. Went to the location and actually spun a bottle and went to the housing unit that it pointed at. Very straightforward. So the following two surveys, we tried to expand upon this a little bit, get a little more sophisticated. These were stratified simple random sampling designs. We made an additional stratification of the East Bank, so now we're dividing the flooded and unflooded areas along census tract boundaries. We did kind of a sub-stratification where the number of units selected in each census tract were proportional to that census tract's number of housing units as of the 2000 census. And basically the reason for doing that was to be able to do some post-stratification afterwards, recarve the area along those census tract lines. What we use as a sampling frame, we got a hold of a water meter address list of 174,000 water meter addresses. Now, as of the 2000 census, there are a little more than 200,000 housing units, so it's not a perfect match. And we didn't have information of, you know, where a water meter address includes multiple units. So for dealing with that, you'd have to essentially randomly select a unit. So there is certainly a built-in bias there. And one of the reasons that we did this census tract substratification was to try and help with the geographic biases associated with where there are more multi-unit structures in certain parts of the city. For example, downtown having more apartment buildings. Okay. Now, the 2006 Louisiana Health and Population Survey, which was occurred about a year later, and this is the one that involved 18 parishes, so we're only talking about Orleans here. In this case, we did a stratified cluster sampling design, and what that essentially involved were what are called block clusters. The Census Bureau, as part of their testing and accuracy for the decennial census, they had carved up the country into block clusters, and they used these to test and calibrate their estimates. They had these block clusters already created, and so were able to pull us a sample of them in those selected parishes. They stratified on a few characteristics, and what we did was send survey teams or surveyors into each of these selected block clusters, and they conducted standard enumeration, whereby they had a map of that cluster and would go around and record where they found housing units. And this, of course, involved some of the issues of what is habitable, and we spent a lot of time dealing with what the appropriate definition is and all the problems associated with that, which I think I'll come back to. Once they had enumerated these block clusters, they then selected a sample based on, you know, a table of random numbers. Okay, so in terms of the survey methods, for the EOC surveys, these emergency operations surveys, which were conducted, of course, much more shorter period of time after Katrina, essentially where 3 weekend visits were conducted, so generally 2 on a Saturday and 1 on a Sunday. If no answer was, if they didn't answer at the door, they left a survey on the doorknob, and went to try and obtain a proxy respondent from a neighbor or someone else that was in the area. Now, here, no habitability determination was made. It was essentially they're occupied or under-occupied. And what this resulted in some of these areas was a slab. And you went back to that slab 3 times. And we did this on purpose, A, because of the difficulty in making that habitability determination, and B, because we were very aware that a lot of people were coming back and visiting their home or what was left of it. And because we also wanted to capture what that daytime influx might be, we wanted to see if we could catch the person there at their what was left of their home. Now, in asking the questions about their occupancy, You know, whether or not they slept there was a different story. Now with the cluster design, the health and population survey, a survey was left at the door when the sample selection was made, and that had a postage, you know, postage paid return envelope. We waited a couple weeks, 3 weeks, and whoever had not responded, we followed up with. Made a minimum of 4 visits, weekends, evenings, and weekdays. So one of the challenges we encountered was, what is a resident at this point? Did they sleep there last night? Are they there that day? Or what we ended up settling on was their 15 of 30, 30 days, sleeping there 15 of 30 days. And we hoped that this kind of helped with the issues of conducting at least those EOC surveys over the weekend, so that we weren't just, if a person was there just over the weekend, they were not defined in that 15 to 30 days. Now, in terms of analysis, the EOC surveys were pretty straightforward. I showed that that equation in the beginning. Pretty straightforward. You're using your questionnaire to find the average persons per household, and then the occupancy rate from how many of those units you estimate to be occupied, and then using the 2000 census as this is what we estimate to be the total number of housing units. Certainly there are problems associated with that. Significant changes have occurred in some areas with development and you know, loss of housing stock. But that was, of course, the best we had. With the stratified cluster design, we had we developed sampling weights, basically the inverse of the selection probability. So based on how the clusters were selected, what their size was, that's where you're getting the weights from. We'll, of course, go further into that. But just to go into some quick results, this is from the survey that was conducted 5 months after Katrina. And this pretty much conforms to what you'd expect. There's kind of an esplanade ridge, which you see some of these squares, these occupied units, fall into what would be otherwise flooded areas. But, again, what you'd expect. I mean, the unflooded areas are where there are people, and then there are plenty of areas where there are not. To just give the estimates, there's a lot of, some of you might be familiar with a lot of the controversy and contention around population estimates in New Orleans, and these are certainly not the only ones. They're the only ones I'm familiar with that were based on surveys, on household surveys. But, of course, we're dealing with, in some of the early surveys, you know, very large margin of error, which was a big challenge resulting from the sample size. And particularly these first three surveys were all volunteer help. You know, there was no money allocated for this and really no time for recruitment. So, you know, this is a lot of the sample size selection was based on how many people are we going to get to show up this weekend. Again, I mentioned a lot of controversy over what the repopulation looked like. This is the trend that these surveys would suggest. And the Census Bureau, the official estimates I threw in there, give an idea of what that might look like. And I guess if you want to, I guess part of the results in this are, like I mentioned, the good, fast, and cheap aspect. And I mentioned for the EOC surveys, I mean, we turned these around in 4 to 6 weeks. And had no operating budget other than the resources available in the EOC and volunteers. We kind of factored it out, and it probably would have come out to about $50 per sample unit if we had to pay for everything. So that certainly wasn't reasonable in that situation. Now, the health and population survey was considerably more expensive. It took considerably longer period of time. Now, we were conducting this in many parishes, but this was a much bigger operation. And that, you know, again, the time is part of this. When are these estimates for, and how long does it take you to produce them? And people were certainly waiting for them. I guess to think about the results, the repopulation narrative, you know, again, is controversial, but there's certainly a lot of evidence of zeal to return in the beginning. And with the reopening of neighborhoods in November and December, utility services being restored later in 05, and then certainly with schools and universities beginning to reopen at the beginning of 06, I think you can talk about why there's such a steep repopulation there. Now, later in the year, in that second six-month period, it's kind of, I guess, declined a little bit in terms of rapid repopulation. And I think there's a lot of challenges that you can point at, and just in terms of, you know, the zeal wears off, and then you're living in a post-disaster environment. High crime, high rent, a lot of bottlenecks, and that, you know, begins to tell the story. So to look at, I guess, the comparison of methods here, as I mentioned, when we're using 2000 census for these early, these EOC estimates, and we're not accounting for demolitions and destruction of units, and that's certainly an issue. If you have if we had had more time, we certainly could have looked at the city's permitting permits and attempted to factor that in. But again, with the need for a rapid turnaround, we had to essentially cut some corners and do a rapid population estimate. The bottle spinning method actually produces a lot of null points, because you spin it and it goes pointing in a direction where there isn't a house. You spend all that time driving out there, and we lost a lot of, I guess, logistical efficiency in dealing with that. And that was a main reason why we said we got to find a better way to do this, which is how we came to these water meter addresses. These are pre-Katrina lists, and, you know, again, there's the big issue of housing unit versus water meter. And, you know, when we don't know how many units pertain to a meter, we aren't able to account for that potential bias there. And of course, some of those meters couldn't be mapped, and that probably has to do with the city's data block. That's always an issue. Now, again, with the cluster design, you know, we're using essentially few clusters. Now, in Orleans, we selected, I think it was 150, something like that. It was a large number, but you're still talking about a relatively small number of clusters to represent a whole lot of clusters. And we were very concerned about that. And, you know, it was actually a reason why we didn't do it earlier on without some of the help that the Census Bureau could provide, which is a whole lot of technical assistance in that. In terms of the survey methods that we employed, again, a big issue of what is habitable in that situation. Some of these standard definitions that the Census Bureau uses were really not helpful to us. You know, you have water lines, but what does that actually mean inside the house, particularly when you can't see in? You do want to be careful about what you ask your surveyors to do, what they are allowed to do. We certainly had safety issues and actually sent National Guard around with a lot of our surveyors. So, you know, what is a habitable house in that situation is really a challenge we dealt with. Now, in the health and population survey, we essentially decided to adopt a very broad definition of habitability. Reason being is we did not want to risk excluding population that would be living in, you know, uninhabitable circumstances, considering that these could be the high-risk groups that we really need to catch. So, we adopted a broad definition, and I guess the repercussions for that are, you know, we can't really speak about what the housing stock for the area is, and, again, what the occupancy rate is. So, but we hope that has, like I said, allowed us to capture the full breadth of the household population. Reliance on proxy responses is very difficult in this situation, because these people are just returning, and they don't necessarily know what's going on with their neighborhood. But we did find a lot of evidence of neighbors, you know, speaking to each other and having some idea of, oh, I haven't spoken to him in a long time, or, you know, I know she's back, so, you know, you got to revisit that house. And I mentioned the weekend population. Of course, it may very well be different from the work week population. I guess our major way of dealing with that was to adopt this 15 of 30 nights definition. We compared that to what our overnight population was, saying how many people were here in this house last night, and it was very, very similar, within a few thousand. So that might be a good sign. But again, you know, we were only able to conduct this over the weekend, and that really, again, had to do with logistical challenges. I mean, we can't get volunteers to show up during the week. Certainly not enough. Okay, so, and I guess as far as data analysis, you know, we can go talk a lot about the, I guess, the statistical ways that we had to do for the health and population survey. I had a number of iterations of that, and that, you know, continues to boggle my mind as I work on it. But the fact of the matter is that for the early surveys, where we had to turn these around so quickly, we needed something, you know, fast and that we could do with the technical resources that we had available to us. And the example is with the health and population survey, we have spent a lot of time, you know, adjusting our estimates and, you know, oh, we don't like how this weighting design, you know, has this assumption built in, so we're going to, and it can never end. So it really shows on how long this takes. I think one of the big results that we've learned from this is planners simply want small area estimates. As soon as you tell them, here's what the region or the parish is, say, okay, well, what about this neighborhood? This is particularly in an urban area like New Orleans, where there's a lot of difference neighborhood by neighborhood. You know, poverty, health status, health insurance status, and so it's really, you know, insufficient. And in that sense, the that simple random sample, essentially, that we did with the water meter addresses was the best in that regard, because it allowed us, as I mentioned with those census tract substrata, to kind of cut the area up as we needed. For, you know, planners said, we'd like you to cut it up like this, and we were able to provide some of that. And as I have written down here, we were able to give them seven sub-parish regions. So I guess I would conclude by the main point that I would stress in this is health researchers really need to be prepared to provide their own denominator after disaster. You really, we saw a lot of evidence of needs assessments, like I mentioned. They would give prevalences or percentages, but what did that mean in terms of how many people had returned? Is that actually a significant need? And so I really would stress that, you know, when you find yourself in that situation, be focused on how am I going to answer the denominator part of this puzzle.